as we sit here, we certainly have physical sensations in the body, and possibly from time to time, emotional sensations in the body. We certainly have auditory thoughts in the mind, internal talk. From time to time, a person might have visual thoughts also in the mind. We need a word for visual thinking. Let's call visual thinking image activity, or just image for short. When you think about a person, you probably get some general impression of their form, what they look like. That general impression is your mental image of them. When you think about a place, you get a general impression of what that place is like. That's your mental image of that place. Likewise for a physical object. The most important thing to remember about the concept of mental image is that it need not be, and in fact usually will not be, something vivid and realistic like a photograph or like looking at an actual physical person or object. For most people, most of the time, mental images are hazy impressions that vanish quickly. Sometimes, for some people, mental images are vivid and stable, like a photograph or the material world. So when I have people work with mental images, they'll often assume, oh, I'm supposed to be seeing something very clear and realistic. That's not the case. Most of the time, your visual thoughts are just hazy impression of something. That hazy impression is a mental image, and usually it vanishes pretty quickly. We've talked about the body from the viewpoint of physical sensations as touch space. We've talked about the same location from the viewpoint of emotional sensations as feel space. We've talked about auditory thinking as talk space. Image space is all the places where you would potentially have visual thoughts. The center of image space for most people is sort of here, in front of or somewhat behind your eyes, this area here, maybe out to here, for most people is the center of image space. And in English, a lot of people call this area their mental screen, as if to imply it's a little bit like a TV screen. Now, when I say mental screen, don't think you're supposed to see a television with a rectangular shape, okay? That's just a metaphor. And in fact, for many people, it's not flat. It's more like a stage, three-dimensional. We're not going to call it the mental screen, though. We're going to call it the center of image space. because image space is broader. For one thing, if you think about your body, particularly when your eyes are closed, you probably get an impression of your body, and that a visual impression, which is distinct from the sensations in your body. That visual impression of your body, what your face looks like, how you're dressed, positioned, that's a visual thought. That's a self-image or body image. Also, if you have a sensation, a touch, or a feel, particularly if your eyes are closed, you may get a picture of that body part, or about a picture of how that sensation is moving. So part of image space is where your body is, the visual thoughts imposed on your body. That's part of image space. Also, if you think about where you are with your eyes closed, if you remember your surroundings, you sort of see your surroundings. Hazy, vague impression that, oh yes, there are people here, or there's Shinzen is in front of me. So you get images projected out around you of what's around you. That's also part of image space. If you hear a sound, a bird chirps, and it's over there, then over in that direction, briefly, you get typically a vague impression of the form of a bird, and then that vanishes. So there are also mental pictures out around you. Now you can see why I call this area the center of image space. When you have memory, planning, and fantasizing, that tends to happen on the mental screen. Memory is visual thoughts of the past. So if your mind goes to the past, you'll probably see what happened in the past somewhere around here. When your mind goes to the future, same thing, you'll probably see future events. And when you fantasize, when you imagine, well, we don't call it imagination for nothing. When you're thinking about things that aren't real, maybe things that could happen that scare you. You're worried, oh, this happened, you see this, you see that. Or you're thinking about things to entertain yourself. Wouldn't it be nice if this happened? Oh, it would be so cool if I did this or they did that. You're entertaining yourself with a fantasy, a daydream that's making you smile. You probably are seeing that in the center of image space. So these are some of the places where visual thoughts can occur. You may not consciously be aware of very much visual thinking. Don't worry about that. It's like feel. It's sometimes there, sometimes not there. But it's good to have a word for it, because although you may not be aware of much conscious visual thinking, everyone has subconscious visual thinking. We store in image space, below the threshold of awareness, we store all the pictures of everything that has ever happened and even could ever happen. Image space stores the imago mundi in Latin. That means all your pictures of the world. The world in miniature is down there. The real world, and also the world of mythology, the world of gods, ghosts, ancestors, spirits, people that have visions, unusual memories of, claim that they have memories of former lives, or see angels, etc. All of that comes out of image space. Image space is much more primitive than talk space. We share visual thinking with animals, or at least vertebrates. Whereas talk presumably is, auditory thinking presumably is unique to humans, because external language presumably is unique to humans as far as we know. Also, in terms of development, a baby can think in pictures as soon as the baby can remember seeing things. But a baby only starts to think in words maybe at 18 months or 2 years, when they start to acquire language. So the image space is important. You may remember the story of the Buddha. Before he was enlightened, he sat all night under a tree, and in image space appeared monsters that represented rage and terror, and sensual desires. All of that came up in image space. That may not ever happen to you, but it does happen to people. It has certainly happened to me. A certain percentage of people at some point in their practice see some very, very strange things related to their kleshas, to their cravings, aversions, and so forth. You don't have to fear that kind of experience. It is absolutely nothing more than mental pictures linked to feel in the body. Just before the Buddha's enlightenment, he penetrated the image-feel system at its most primitive level. Now, in English, we call those strange images archetypes, archetype. You may never have this happen to you. You may never see archetypes. But if you do, now, just treat them like any other image. The only reason that they represent a challenge is they're linked to feel very strongly. But now you know about that. So you can work just with the image, just with the feel. Later on, I'll show you how to work with the whole system together. If you have trauma, and that surfaces, it's going to surface primarily in image feel. Just treat that like anything else, and it will work its way through. You don't have to experience traumatic images. You don't have to experience archetypal images. Hey, you don't have to experience any images at all. But now we have terms for these things, if they should ever occur, and you have a notion of what to do, which is don't do anything. Don't do anything special. Just either note it as image or note the feel impact that it has on your body, and that's it. Then it will work its way through. Yes. Oh, louder, please. Okay, so this is a report of my body is changing. Okay, let me ask you some questions. You're aware, sometimes it seems to be large, sometimes it seems to be small. It's like doing this kind of thing. Yes, and part of that is coming through your image of the body, is that correct? Is part of that also coming through the sensations, the touch and feel? Are they getting big and they getting small? So now you know the answer to your question. The way that we perceive that we have a body when our eyes are closed, we're not looking at it, primarily what produces the impression I have a body is a combination of touch, feel, and the mental image of the body. So if you're having distortions in the size and shape of your body, those distortions will be in touch, feel, and image of the body. So yes, it comes up in all of those. That answers your question. But it doesn't answer the, I'll take it in a second. It doesn't answer the implied question, which is probably, what in the world's happening to me? Okay, what does that mean, that my body's getting big and small and all of that? We won't have time to talk about that in detail now. It's a theme that we're going to systematically explore in the second half of this retreat. I'm teaching you how to keep track of your body and mind experience, touch, feel, image, talk. Sometimes your body and mind experience will be quite solid, stable. However, other times it's not solid and stable. It becomes wavy. It becomes vibrations. It expands. It contracts. It flows. The it, in this case, being some combination of touch, feel, image, talk. Now, since touch and feel are your body and image and talk are your mind, when they're solid and stable, then that's the that's what we're used to. When they start to expand and contract and vibrate and flow and melt, that's not what we're used to. However, that is a very significant experience. And if that happens, just let it happen. There is certainly no reason to be afraid of that. Technically, in the language of Buddhism, when that happens, you are beginning to get insight into anicca, A-N-I-C-C-A. Anicca is impermanence, a major theme in the process of enlightenment. We're not going to try to make that happen. We're not going to try to prevent that from happening. But if touch, feel, image, talk, flow, let them flow. And we'll be working with that side of experience later on. Did that adequately address what's happening with you? Okay, good.
Okay.
Yes.
I have a question. You mentioned memory planning and fantasy in the space of the inner state, but it also appears in touch state.
Absolutely. My use of memory plan fantasy was to alert you to the fact that if there is a visual component, which there usually is in memory plan fantasy, it's likely to be here. So the trick is to know, in mindfulness, the trick is to know what to look for and where to look for it. A lot of people say, I never have any images, okay? I never have any visual thoughts. Many people tell me this. Then I give them the following exercise. I say, okay, if you have any thought at all, if it involves a person, I want you to say out loud, person. If you're thinking of a place, I want you to say place. If you're thinking of a physical object, I want you to say object. If you're thinking about past, I want you to say past. If you're thinking about where you are now, I want you to say present. So I'll say, okay, now, so say those words out loud. And if you have no thought, then say no thought. So they'll go person, person, place, including yourself as a person, right? Person, object, past, past, past. Okay? Then I say, okay, now, when you said person, did you get some impression of that person? When you said place, did you get some impression of that form? And of course, they'll say, well, yes. Every time I thought of a person, every time, including myself, every time I thought of a place, including where I am now, every time I thought about a physical object, including the objects in this room, every time I had a memory, I planned something, or I imagined something, I had a visual impression. Then I say, that's what I mean by image. And then they say, why didn't you tell me? And then I say, I did, 4 times. But it's nothing special. It's not vivid. It's just like a hazy impression that then goes away. Yes, I think I mentioned that. But I thought I was supposed to see like a photograph. I think I said it's not, okay, necessarily. Oh yeah, you did say that, didn't you? That's what happens when I train people to do visual thinking. I like to do it one-on-one, okay? The assumption always is, I can't be doing this right. I must not be experiencing what he's asking me to experience, etc., etc. So that's why I use those words. But it is absolutely true that image and talk work together. So you see the scene, you hear the dialogue. The scene is in image space, probably on the mental screen, and the conversations are here. In other words, we have in our minds an internal home entertainment system. It's not a coincidence that our home entertainment system has audio video, okay? Because our home entertainment system, the DVD player, the television, and so forth, that just creates a visual and an auditory stimulus. And if we don't have that visual and auditory stimulus in the outside world, then we start to think it up on the inside. So that's image. So thinking, as I would define it, on the surface, consists of some combination of image talk. So at any given instant, there are exactly four possibilities as far as the surface of the mind goes. You are either thinking in pictures only, or you're thinking in words only, or you're thinking in both at the same time, or you're not thinking. It's four possibilities. Now we have a way to track that that's tangible. It's sensory, it's localizable, you know where to look for images, you know where to look for talk. Now the mind is no longer an abstraction. It's a sensory experience that you can track in time. Yes.
Is a dream the same image in the auditory space exactly like the same system like we aware to it in awareness time?
When we're dreaming, the dominant sensory experience for most people in dream is image activity. Okay. But we can also get talk, and we can get feel, and in fact, we can also get touch in a dream. And we can get smell and taste in the dream.
And archetypes.
Huh?
And archetypes also.
And archetypes appear in the dreams. That's correct, can appear in the dreams. So any of the senses can sort of operate in the dream, but the dream world is primarily the world of image and somewhat the world of talk. Yes. I will briefly address that, and we'll go into more detail when we work with the restful states. Let's say that you don't have any image activity at all at a given moment. When you close your eyes, in the center of image space, what if you don't have any images? You still have a visual experience there, right? You may have some darkness because you've closed your eyes, but there can also be some brightness because some light comes in through your eyelids. I'm talking about the center of image space. This area here, when your eyes are closed. Does it make sense that there is some mixture of dark and bright there? Maybe primarily dark, maybe primarily bright. Often a kind of blotchy mixture of both. There may also be, when you close your eyes in the center of image space, colors. Often it's pink or purple and so forth. So, when you close your eyes in the center of image space, there are possibly three types of sensory experience. Images, which are visual thoughts, color, and just pure dark or pure bright, or sort of both. Okay. Now, when you work, when you're noting mental images, the label is going to be image. You only note mental images if they're present. Okay? It's like feel. You don't, there might not be feel, so there's no reason to note feel if you don't have feel. There's no reason to note image unless image is happening. But let's say you're noting image, then the image disappears. You want to stay in the center of image space, so you'll be strategically positioned if some other image comes up. Okay? So what are you going to look at? You look at the darkness or the brightness. And we'll say that that represents the blank mental screen. Now, if you have color there, for now, just for now, be interested in how dark or bright it is, rather than the actual color itself. Okay? Now you say why, and I can happily tell you why, but that will take about 20 minutes. And it relates to working with restful states, so I don't want to go too far off subject right now. But let's say that you have enough image activity to justify spending a period of time noting image, but then for a second there is no image, but you still want to, there probably will be an image in a minute, so you still want to stay in the centered in image space, then just watch the darkness, brightness, grayness, or mixture of those. And don't be so
in...
The splashes of color are not image. We will define image to be visual thinking. In order for something to be thinking, it has to relate to people, places, objects, past, present, future. Symbols are visual thoughts. But clouds of pink and purple, they're visual, but they're not forms of thinking. Therefore, by our definition, they are not images. They are what? Well, they're sight, actually, even though your eyes are closed. They're more like, they're part of sight space, let's say for now. So now you know that what image is and what it's not. If you get colors and geometric patterns, those aren't visual thoughts. We won't count them as image. But if you're thinking about, I repeat again, I think this is probably at least time number four, people, places, objects, past, future, fantasy, and impression of where you are, impression of what your body looks like, any of these things that is visual, however hazy, however vague, however short, all of that counts as image activity. Okay? So we're pretty clear about what image is and what image is not. Let me repeat, certainly for the fourth time, you may not have much image activity. Okay? If you do, and if you wish to work with that, you can mentally lay, where you can note images. So the image is there, you note image, and you look at that image. It may vanish instantly, or it may stick around. If it vanishes instantly, then just look at the blank, the dark or bright that's in the center of image space. If the image sticks around, watch it. The image may be stable, or it may sort of melt and morph, wave in, wave out. Either is fine. At some point, the image will vanish. After it vanishes, a new image may come up or not. If no new image comes up, you're looking at the blank and just resting in that blank and enjoy that. And then if all images stop, then go to something else. If the images continue, then you can continue to note image activity. Good. I saw some other hands.
What about images when you meditate
Very good question. It is absolutely the case that you could see mental images with your eyes open. In fact, it's not all that unusual. In English, we have a phrase to daydream. Okay? Daydream means your eyes are open typically, but you're not looking at sights in the material world. You're having a memory. You see how my eyes are defocused now? I'm looking at the center of image space right about here, and I'm seeing some scene that maybe entertains me or comes from the past. I'm in image space. My eyes are open, but my attention is not out. My attention is in to the internally generated vision. So you can note image activity with your eyes open if that occurs. Just like you can note talk or touch or feel with your eyes open.
I couldn't focus before when we did meditation with eyes open, so I couldn't focus on any certain alert. Can it be because of the visual images, but I just wasn't noticing the images?
When you meditated with your eyes open, you found that the external world of sight sort of swirled and never fixated?
Yes.
Good. Yes. Good. Let that happen. That's insight into impermanence. That's the impermanence of the material world. The material world is not so material. It really is just that flow of color and form. Okay? So let that happen and let that flow just massage you and enjoy it.
It feels like it comes from the eyes, not from the outside. Like the eyes are twisted, not like the world.
Well, this gets us into a deep question that we're not going to go into detail about. But I don't myself make any claims about the nature of objective reality. As far as I'm concerned, the only thing we're going to work with is our sensory experience. And if our sensory experience flows, then that's what's happening. You might say, oh yeah, but the world really is material and solid. To which I would just briefly say, oh yeah? Ask a physicist what the so-called material world actually is. Ask a quantum physicist about this so-called solid external reality. Well, it's, you know, what are they going to say? It's a vibrating probability wave. It's, okay, it's fluctuation of the void. It's something coming from nothing due to Heisenberg uncertainty principle. That's the material world. Well, that doesn't sound to me like very material, okay? That reflects in our senses. When there's not much concentration, clarity, and equanimity, then it seems like it's a particle. When there's a lot of concentration, clarity, and equanimity, it seems like it's a wave. The it meaning our senses. So I don't make claims about philosophy or the nature of reality. But if you're, if something happens to your eyes that allows the world to be a wave, then that's sensory reality. And you know what? It's not completely so different from what the physicist says is the actual world. So why not just let that be real too? Does that make sense? That's surface. I could give you a deeper answer, but that would take a lot more time. The question is, when you're having image activity and your eyes are open, your eyes may go up to the right or down to the left, and does that indicate something about the content of the visual thoughts that you're happening. I've got your question right, correct? And the answer is, I don't know. Some people claim that is the case. If that is the case, that's very interesting, and probably quite useful. However, anybody can claim anything. I would have to see if there is objective scientific research that would validate those claims. The answer is, I don't know if there is credible research that says that is the case. Oh, yes. The question was, some people say that you can tell what type of visual thought a person is having when their eyes are open by whether their eyes move up or down or to the side, or whether they move to the right or to the left. That the change in the optic axis indicates what type of mental images they're having. Or broadly, whether they're having talk, image, or feel. Some people claim that. Some people claim if when you're thinking, you look down to the left, that shows you're in feel space, okay? And then you look up to the right, that shows maybe you're in image space, or up to the left, you're in talk space. Some people make those claims. That's what, it's Renee, isn't it? That's what Renee was asking about. And she said, is that true? And I said, I don't know.
It's not about image, okay?
Probably.
If you can speak a bit more about purification?
That's a big topic. So I think that's too complicated to talk about right now. We'll talk about it later.
Okay.
Yeah, or I'll bring it up later on in the retreat.
And why do you call image and talk sensual events?
Actually, I use the word sensory events.
Sensory.
Yeah. Because they're tangible. Some people claim that the thinking process is not a sensory experience. It's intangible. It's not intangible. Right, abstraction. Thought is an abstraction. And I like people to see that, at least on the surface, thought is not an abstraction. We see the world, we hear the world, in the material sense, and when we think about the world, we also see it here. So in that sense, it's a sensory event. And in fact, in traditional Buddhism, the classification of the senses is that there are six senses. In Western thinking, there are five senses: hearing, seeing, smelling, tasting, and body sensation are the five senses in the Western world. In Buddhism, hearing, seeing, smelling, tasting, body sensation, and thinking are the six forms of consciousness, or six senses. I like to divide thinking into image and talk. I like to divide body sensation into touch and feel, and then I lump smell and taste under touch. So I just chop the pie up differently. But according to Buddhist way of viewing, thought is a sensory object, like body sensation or a smell or a taste.
Can I ask one more question?
Certainly.
About dukkha. You make the definition between pain and suffering. But as much as I know about the Buddha, he doesn't make this definition. He says getting what you don't like is suffering, and not getting what you like is suffering. And on the other hand, he says that pain and death and give birth are also dukkha, also suffering. And you make this definition, and I wonder why the Buddha, as much as I know, didn't make this definition.
This is complicated and messy. too much to go into right now. The question, you're not just asking one question, you're asking several questions tangled together that relate to terminology, how words are used, etc. I'm going to have to hold off on that for now. It will take us too far afield. However, the Buddha said that something called grasping is the necessary cause for dukkha. Okay? There is a thing called grasping that is the necessary cause for dukkha. Necessary cause, dukkha is usually translated as, quote, suffering. But I'm using now the word dukkha. I'm using the Pali word, not the English word, on purpose, okay? There is something called tanha, usually translated into English as grasping. Notice I'm using Pali words now. I'm not using English words, because the English words may not convey what the Pali conveys. So the Buddha said, the Buddha did not talk about suffering. That's English. The Buddha talked about dukkha. That's Pali, okay? The Buddha did not talk about grasping. That's English. He talked about something called tanha, okay? So there is a necessary cause for dukkha. That is tanha, meaning when you eliminate tanha, you eliminate dukkha. You can think of tanha as non-equanimity. Okay, so when you have enough equanimity, you have eliminated suffering. So I'm saying exactly what the Buddha said. Okay.
So when you born, you have tanha. When you become old, when you die, you have tanha.
Yes.
Okay.
Otherwise, being born and dying wouldn't hurt. Oh, it's too complicated. I'm sorry, I'm not to dismiss it, but this gets way into areas that are going to not allow you to meditate. We will talk about this later on. I'm not trying to dismiss it or say it's not important. It's complicated. It has centuries of history and scholasticism, and there's just a lot to it, okay? And we just can't go there and also learn how to meditate.
I want to ask something about my experience. When I hear you, it seems that I understand. But when I'm trying to do it, like a note, touch, feel, and now when I have the talk, it seems that there's talk all the time. When I note, touch, the talk begins. There's no season of talking, inside talk. So when I no talk, they start a whole conversation. And if I try to find a feeling, so the feelings are connected to some images or some people, always it's in a relationship. So I notice that they always have internal talk.
So the comment is, I'm noticing that all the channels are on all the time. I always have internal talk. There's often
always
feel.
Touch.
That's right. There's always some touch. How about images? You have that also? Or you haven't looked yet?
Yeah, but I saw it when I have an internal talk. It's about people. About,
and you see the places.
Yeah.
So I would say that you have gotten a major insight. This is not a problem, okay? It's
but
an
no
aha.
No quiet, no calmness, no peace.
No rest.
No rest. All the time. The TV is working 24 hours.
Okay. So, apparently no rest. Let's put it that way. you have gotten insight into what has been going on your entire life. It's all the channels have always been going at some level. But you never had words for them, and you never carefully paid attention to them. Now you have words for it, and lo and behold, it's like, oh my God, all of this goes on. All your life, those channels have been going on, or at least all your adult life, and they have been tangled together, and you've been calling that self. You've been calling that me. Okay, now you see what I've been calling me is touch, feel, image, talk. And there's a lot of it. Yeah, and guess what? That's just the tip of the iceberg. So...
Can we prolong the retreat?
Actually, I was planning on doing it for 1 month. And we've taken away, we're going to take your car keys and you have to stay here and become enlightened. Because it will take at least 1 month just for me to complete what I want to talk about in 10 days the way we're going now.
We'll go to America.
Actually... I should have said, don't you dare ask any questions. The good news is you can actually continue the retreat forever, because every month, on the second weekend of every month, I run telephone-based retreats with these techniques. And, of course, well, so you can continue to study with me very conveniently, very easily, forever, if you like this approach. So, here's the surface of your consciousness. Here's touch, feel, image, and talk. Now you're aware all these channels are active. Wait till you start to see what's below the threshold of awareness. In your subconscious mind, okay. Four peaks: touch, feel, image, talk, and the line is conscious awareness. What's below the line is the subconscious activity that precedes what you're now being aware of.
It comes up in meditation.
That's right. It comes up from a matrix of the subconscious mind. Now you're aware of these four peaks. As you pay attention to those, some awareness is going down into the where it's all coming from. Eventually, this line, see, before, here's where your consciousness was. You said there's a thing called a self here. Okay? So, this is touch, feel, image, talk. This marker represents what you're consciously aware of. When you start, you're not consciously aware of any of this. You just say, I am. Now, you're starting to practice, and it's like, oh my goodness. Look at what's here. There's this chatter. There's these mental pictures. There are these physical and emotional sensations. As you continue to meditate, this consciousness is going to go further and further and further, like this. And it's going to be, aha, aha. Now, you ask, where is this leading? So I'll show you where it's leading.
I'm a fool.
This one?
No.
Okay, you started here. You say, I am a body and mind. Now it's like, oh, I see, I'm touch, feel, image, talk. Below that is more, below that is more, but then it starts to get quieter, okay? And it all unifies at the still point of the turning world. This is completeness, shlemut, shalom. This is where it comes from.
So you distinguish in order to...
In order to unite.
There is no distinction.
That's insight.
You study in order to know that there's nothing to study.
You make distinctions that are empowering, that eventually lead to a oneness that is empowering. Most people make distinctions that create problems, and if they experience oneness, it's pathological. So, see what it's interesting, huh?
There's no touch there when you experience momentarily.
Here?
Yes. There's no feeling.
At the still point of the turning world, there is complete touch, complete image, complete talk, complete sight, and complete sound. So both the self and the world are united in a point that has no extension in time or space. And that is called nirodha, or cessation. But in the mystical traditions of the world, it's also called emptiness or ayin. This is bri'ah yesh me'ayin. Moment by moment, continuous creation in consciousness. What's the it?
You feel that you're united, that there's no separation?
It not only can happen, it will happen to you. At some time in the future.
Yeah.
So, it is, remember I claimed that this is a science. When you begin to study a science at the beginning, it's like, it doesn't make any sense. It's just a lot of different pieces of words and definitions, and it doesn't fit. And why bother? And it's just being fussy about things. Okay, why did he say touches this? Why is he making us separate things out? So that you can have the insight you're now having, and it's just day two. Okay, out of 10, out of hopefully a lifetime. So, yes, we go from surface to source, and then we see how source creates self and world. This is Bitul, this is Bri'ah, okay? And that is happening moment by moment in consciousness.
Does the science know it then? How does it relate to enlightenment or the source?
I'm sorry, I didn't quite understand the question. Is there scientific evidence for this?
Something like that. Yeah. How does science relate to that?
Okay. Nah. That's my last talk at this retreat. Remember, I said that at the end of the retreat, I wanted you to have answers to a number of interrogative questions. What is mindfulness? Why practice mindfulness? How do you practice mindfulness? Who practices it? Okay? The last questions I want to answer on the last day is, where did mindfulness come from historically, and where is it going, perhaps, in the future? The where is it going, perhaps, in the future relates to the interaction of mindfulness and modern science. So there is, at this point, some scientific evidence for this, but there will be much, much more, I believe, in the future, and we'll talk a little bit about how that's happening found. It's very, very interesting, actually. So you folks are definitely asking the right questions. Yes.
But to
taking me back before, you give me back. I mean in the past. And then big mixing. But what I understand from him, never mind, just look. Just look.
Okay.
Back. Never mind what's happening at the time. So sometimes you could be some kind of confused because already I remember something odd, that one. And then I'm not connected now.
I understand. I think you had two questions, if I understood properly. One is, how does this relate to the oneness of human being? Did I understand that?
Like, okay, I am there in the Mako. Where are you? Where are she? How do you, where is the worst people? Where is the smart people?
Yes,
okay,
so question number one is, how does this sort of relate to the family of humanity? Yes. And then question number two is about past, future, and present as it comes up. Let's take question number two first. when you have a mental picture or when you have internal conversation, the content, by that I mean the subject matter, could be past, could be present, could be future, or it could be fantasy. So the content ranges over time, including time out of time, time that doesn't even exist, it's imaginary events. So the content of your images and your talk can take you into the past, into the future, and so forth. However, the moment of arising of the image is the present. Okay? It's arising in the present, and it's disappearing in the present. So, to the extent that you're interested in detecting the arising and passing, though that's always in the present. The sensory event is in the present, even though what it's about is in the past. That's why we're interested in having you track sensory experience. So if you are dealing with the mind in terms of the content, then it takes you all over time and space. If you're dealing with the mind as a sensory event, it's always here and now. Or specifically, it's here, and here, and now. Okay? Now let's do it.
Can I ask one practical question about viewing? If we don't have an image right now, is it okay if we conjure up an image?
Okay, very, very good question. See, there is so much to talk about. It's a science. This technique is a just observing technique. It's not a mental creation of images. That's a whole other way of working. So if you don't have any image, then just be aware of the blank, the dark or the bright in front of, behind your closed eyes. And that's it. Okay? So we distinguish between intentionally creating feel image talk, which is one practice. Distinguish that from just observing feel image talk. That's a different practice. You may not have image. You may not have feel. You probably have talk, okay? You almost certainly have touch and sight and sound. Take a moment to lengthen your spine and let your whole body settle. Now, bring your attention to the center of image space, in front of and or behind your closed eyes. You may get mental images there. If so, note image and look at the image. You may get mental images elsewhere. Maybe right now you're having a mental image of me talking, projected out in front of you. You may get images of your own body. If you have images in the center of image space, or out around you, or back where your body is, note those also as image. Remember, image is typically a vague impression of form that disappears quickly. Typically. Some of you may have vivid images, intense and realistic and stable. Fine, that's image. But wispy, hazy impressions are also image. It is possible that you have no image activity whatsoever. In that case, just look at the dark, bright, or gray in the center of image space. We'll call that blank. Just look at the mental blank. And enjoy that restful state. If at some point images appear, note image. Otherwise, just be aware of the blank for a little while. The mental label is image. Now, if at this time there's enough image activity to justify continuing this technique, then continue to note image. Look at the image. It might stick around, it might vanish. If it vanishes, there might be blank for a while, or there might immediately be another image. So if there's enough image activity at this time to justify doing this technique, then continue. If not, and you want to use one of the other techniques, you can. You can note touch, or feel, or talk, if there's not enough image to warrant working with image. If there is, then continue to note images. Remember, if you're thinking, and if you're thinking about people, places, objects, memory, plan, fantasy, if you're thinking about things you fear or desire, you probably have some impression of form. That's image activity. No image? No problem. There are plenty of other sensory events to explore.
Good.